Got it. Here we go. Hey, by the way, I forgot to find out. Is anybody in the wagon?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Tom. Tom, I know.
Just
that,
take a look.
Well, he's not here yet. The wagon's not here. Oh, here comes the wagon now, Tom. And by the way, the wagon is... Apparently, you don't need anybody to drive it, because normally you drive the wagon. That's the wagon we use to spread news and opinion. Teeny tiny lady just sitting there in the pickle jar with no one holding on to her. Oh, wait a minute. Wait, hold on. There's somebody in the wagon.
What kind of drugs, Denny?
It doesn't matter. How in the hell did you get involved with drugs?
What kind of drugs do you take? What the hell is wrong with you?
You're out in the middle of something. Wow. What's that from, Tom? Do you remember?
No.
That's from The Room.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That's brilliant. All right. Great show.
Bob Stelton. 710. ESPN Sports.
I love Tom's response to that. No.
The nice thing about Tom is he's the same guy off the air as he is on the air. So it's not like he's going to try to cover. He's like, huh? Nope.
And he did it with a big, he said it with a giant smile. He's the happiest guy in the world.
He is.
That's right.
Tom, let me take your temperature because I found the thermometer. And by the way, it's not an anal thermometer. Somebody corrected me. It's a rectal thermometer.
Ah.
Yeah, here we go, Tom.
Big difference.
I'm going to need you to roll over, pull your knees up to your chest.
Can I leave?
Well, hold on. What is your temperature right now on the overall feeling about the Seahawks?
So I'm a 6.5 out of 10.
You've dropped a half a point, even though the Seahawks end up losing 36-31 to the Rams. So they lost to the Broncos, lose to the Bears. We lose to the Rams again, lose to the Chargers. And Bob, what do we gain from knowledge of this last loss?
This is what we expected, but they were better than we expected. And this is not me trying to find the silver lining or blow smoke up anybody's backside here. This is, I thought they were going to get handled pretty easily because they were going without DJ Fluker, who's been huge, literally huge for this team this year. Chris Carson was out,
right,
and McDougal was extremely limited, even though he was on the field yesterday, going up against arguably the best team, one of the best teams in the NFL on their home field. I thought this could be ugly.
Yeah.
The fact that they were in it, that they had a shot all the way down to the last play, pretty impressive. You put up over 270 yards rushing on this team. You put up 31 points. I mean, yeah, they lost. It's a bottom line business. You lost the game. But I think they're better than a lot of people have given them credit for. And the fact that they were able to compete the way that they did, considering how shorthanded they were against an explosive team like that, pretty impressive.
So what did you think they were going to lose by?
I thought it'd be double digits.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the Rams can explode. These are key guys that are hurt.
Yeah.
Fluker is absolutely essential to what they do. Chris Carson is essential to what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley McDougal, these aren't bit players or, hey, you know, he's a backup. We can do fine without him. These are starters who have impact week in, week out. So you're going up against that team with that explosive nature on both sides of the ball on their home field, that shorthanded. Yeah, they were, I think, a 9.5 point. I'm not sure what the line was before the game kicked off, but I think 9.5 points was a spread.
I put the bet down at 8 with my son.
Yeah?
Yeah, so he ended up winning.
Yeah, it was, I mean, again, I know people are like, hey, there are no moral victories. You're right, there aren't. You lost the game, you're now under 500, but I think you went into this five-game stretch looking, all right, you should win this one. This is going to be a tough one. This is one we all looked at and said, yeah, they're not going to get that, but they're going to beat the Packers, and they've got a shot against the Panthers. You take three of those five, doesn't matter which three. You'd like to get the one in your division?
Uh-huh.
Take three of those five. You're sitting nice and pretty.
From the couch, Tom, question.
Well, yeah, first off, I have that exact same response. I'm sort of a proud loser today. I mean, I thought they did go down, but I took a lot of pride in their performance, especially given those crucial injuries. But Bob, the question I want to ask you is, the clutch performance component of Russell Wilson's game. I hate to say this, you know, I'm a huge University of Washington Husky fan, and the big knock against Jake Browning is that he's never led us to a classic come-from-behind win. And I noticed yesterday, as we were gearing up for that, getting the ball for in a minute and 46, I think, left, that I used to feel like, okay, this is inevitable. This is like Aaron Rodgers getting the ball with 2 minutes left. We are going to go down there and score. This is two games in a row that I noticed I didn't have any faith. To me, I'm afraid this year, Russell Wilson's performance at the end of games reminds me of my expectations for Jake Browning's. We'll make a valiant effort, but it'll always come short.
Yeah.
How fair a comparison is that?
I don't know that it's completely fair. I get why you feel that, because it hasn't happened much this year, but Russell's got a long resume. A long resume of bringing this team back, bringing them from behind in the fourth quarter. I mean, it's just what he's been, which is why the expectation is where it is. He didn't get it done yesterday for various reasons. I don't put it all on him because the line was getting hammered by Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh. I mean, that's as formidable as it gets. And they got through on him. And on that final play of the game, there was pressure. He scrambles out of the pocket. I feel like he should have made the throw. And I'm not debating whether it was a tough throw, not a tough throw, very tough throw. But the reality is you had Tyler Lockett there against the sideline with about a 6-yard gap between him and the defensive back. Yeah, you got to put a lot of touch on that ball to get it over the top of the head of the defensive back. It's almost like a basketball shot.
Yeah.
You got to put some arc and sort of float it in there, and he's running full speed toward him. Very tough throw. But Russell makes tough throws. That's what elite quarterbacks do. You make tough throws, and on fourth down, your final play of the game, you got to make that throw, man. And it's not all on him.
The
strip fumble was not on him. That's the line getting hammered.
Right.
But you still had a shot. You got to convert there.
Let me ask you, what is the sports world saying about the onside kick?
They don't like it. The only people that like it are Pete and his coaching staff.
What were they thinking?
They were thinking that they saw something in the setup of the Rams that gave them an opportunity. And I heard Pete this morning talking about, hey, it was there for us. It was, and you know what? You look at the film and I see what he was seeing. Sebastian Janikowski kicked it to the one Ram that was in the area. Right to him.
Okay.
I mean, there literally was an opportunity. So I get what he was seeing. The problem is you couldn't stop that offense all day. So you're putting if you don't convert, you're putting your defense, which was already having trouble, in a really bad spot. So, I don't love the decision. I understand what he was seeing going back and looking at it. He literally kicked it right to the one Ram.
Yeah.
The one who was in the area. That's where you don't want to kick
it. How about, and then what was the thing with the drop kick?
Well, that was feeling like you've got a better opportunity with field position because you can go directional with Michael Dixon. He's got the ability to put the ball where he wants to put it. They didn't want a big run back, so they were trying to pin them back and give them a long field.
Okay.
Your defense was really just having a rough day trying to slow them down.
Tom, anything else?
Yeah, just one quick question, Bob. We've got a big game coming up on Thursday. John Kerley will actually be at that game in a key, crucial seat. We're assuming
a crucial seat.
I don't want to tell you how much money I spent on these tickets.
A crucial seat, a seat of impact.
Yeah. I'll show you. Go ahead, Bob.
He will be the reason why Aaron Rodgers is discombobulated in this game. I'm just assuming, as a Seahawks fan, that we are going to win that game. Any reason to think we might not?
Well, because it's Aaron Rodgers, but
yes,
that's a crucial seat.
Isn't that good?
Yeah, that's good.
$2,800 I paid for those seats.
Stop it.
No, I'm serious.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I got a handwritten note from the president of Vivid Seats thanking me and telling me they've
for keeping his business afloat.
Wow. We've started a scholarship program named after you.
Oh, wow. That is a crucial seat.
I told you.
It's Aaron Rodgers, Tom, so you never, ever, ever, ever underestimate what he can do. He's as good as it gets in this league, and that's with all due respect to Tom Brady. Yeah. He's in that conversation. He can do big things out there. But I expect the Seahawks to win. I expect them to win because the Packers aren't truly the Packers this year. They're scuffling a bit.
Uh-huh.
Even though they're winning, they're not winning pretty. The explosiveness isn't there with the team right now.
I think the game might be worth $2,800, though, because we have such great, spectacular, historically memorable games with the Packers in our stadium. This could be a fantastic turnaround our season.
Plus, Tom, the way I looked at it is it turned a rye to justify it. I mean, I tried to come up with about 2,800 different reasons on why. I said to him, I said, rye, look at me. And he goes, Dad, I'm looking at you. I said, I know, but I make it seem more dramatic. Look at me and don't blink. How many times do we get an opportunity to see an athlete like Aaron Rodgers? How many times LeBron James? Right, there's certain people you have to see before they leave the field, and I think Aaron Rodgers is one of those individuals that needs to be seen in person.
You're absolutely right.
Okay, good.
Seriously, I think you're absolutely right. And I know Seattle fans love to hate him, and that's great.
Right.
I love watching that guy play. I don't want to see him play well against the Seahawks.
Yeah.
But he's a guy I will tune in to watch when they're playing other teams and go, man, I'll just marvel at what he's able to do.
Right.
Often with a limited cast around him. He's a special athlete, and he can beat you. But I think the Seahawks get this one on a short week. I think it's there. They need to win this game.
One last question, Bob. Yes. What on your list of athletes to see before they leave the field? And I'm talking about all sports. Who's on your list?
That's playing now.
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't seen LeBron, he would be one.
LeBron James.
Obviously, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees is another guy that you keep in that. Mike Trout is a guy. If you've never seen Mike Trout, he's going to go down as one of the all-time greats. Boy, who else am I missing here? There's a lot of great ones, but ones that you feel like are going to be talked about.
You got to see.
When you're an old guy talking to your
kids. How about hockey? Hockey. When we get a hockey team.
Tom.
My eyes just glazed over.
I know. Yeah, I did that for you. I hit that button to get you out of here. All right, thanks, Bob.
Nice save. Nice save. Appreciate it.
Yeah, really. Hockey. See you,
Tom.
God. Tom, the point of this thing is to have people listen to the show. Okay, we want people to keep listening.
Hey, Bob Stelton.
But Bob Stelton's going to answer a hockey question?
We're getting a hockey
He ran out of steam after Trout. I'm not going to throw hockey at him. Gee whiz. How about ladies soccer? How about ladies soccer? Why'd you ask that question?
You did. He gave me a look when you asked that question, Tom. It was the scared I'd ever seen about Stelton.
Yes. Yeah. All right, moving on. Do you think they're going to win?
The Seahawks are going to be sold.
I know. By the way, if you want to buy an NFL team, the value of an NFL team is about $2.4 billion is the average. The Dallas Cowboys are coming at $4.8 billion. Then underneath them are the Patriots at like $3.8 billion. They've gone up a value of 8% in the last year. And their operating profits, that's money before you take the deductions and the expenses and everything else, is about $101 million a year. So if they decide they're going to sell, and why are there some reports that it will now be sold? Did Paul Allen's sister say this?
Yeah. Well, what they say is that he set up, in case of his death kind of scenario, a succession, and apparently word is being leaked that in that succession was they were going to sell the team and all the profits would go to the Paul Gates Foundation. So the other requirement, according to the NFL, is that the team will stay in Seattle, which is our biggest fear, is that it might go somewhere. I think that's not going to be the case. But the fact that we're going to have new owners obviously makes you nervous, because Paul Allen turned out to be the perfect owner. He had all the money in the world and he didn't interfere. Mm-hmm. And the amazing thing is, if you know, not that you need any more proof that he's a smart guy, that Paul Allen, he bought the team for $194 million. It's now worth $2.5 billion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
that alone would put somebody on easy street.
Well, wasn't it considered sort of a crappy franchise, or at least did he buy it at the bottom of the market? Yeah.
Well, no. Remember what happened? They were the guy. The
Ken Behring was going to take the team and move it, right?
Take it to L.A. because he didn't think it was as profitable up here as it would be in L.A. So, I mean, and the thing is, the great thing about Paul Allen is he did this out of the goodness of his heart. He wasn't a huge football fan. He became one, but he did it to keep the team in Seattle. That's the only reason, and that's why it makes some sense now that he's gone to sell to somebody else. As long as they keep it in Seattle, but no, it was just a goodwill gesture on his part. Mm-hmm. He could throw $194 million at it because he had a few extra $100 million floating around.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who steps up, buys it. Because then do they get in there and start putting their fingers in various pies? Do they they get rid of Pete? You know, do they get rid of John? Do they start saying, you know what, we're going to change the whole back office or front office, get our guys in there? And then what ends up with the quote-unquote system that Pete has put in place for the last, six, seven years?
Yeah. My guess is, though, by the time ownership actually comes to pass, because they say there's nothing imminent, by the time the ownership comes to pass, Pete Carroll might be near the end of his run. Mm-hmm. You know, his contract will run out. He may run, coach for another 2 or 3 years, but it might be a perfect transition for a new owner to find a new coach and general manager.
And that'll be just about the time we find out who wins the Senate and governor race in Florida. On Fox News, Rick Scott, who is now the sitting governor, is still talking about as if he's won the race.
Well, we had 8 million people vote. Chuck Schumer spent over $50 million trying to beat me, but we won. Every supervisor election has reported their results. I'm up about, I think, 12,500 votes. There's never been a recount that's changed in Florida or any other state, any sort of win like that. So while we're going through the recount, we won. The citizens of the state won. I'm going to be going to D.C., and I'm going to do exactly what I did in Florida, try to change the direction of the country like we tried to change the direction of Florida.
So it's in Broward County, which is a heavy liberal Democrat stronghold in Florida,
yeah.
Right? They've had problems there before. There was another woman that oversaw the whole thing. I think they took her, they walked her, marched, as according to the piece I read, they marched her out of the office. I don't have the hand her in handcuffs. Then another gal steps in there named Snipes. She runs a thing. She gets her wrist slapped a number of times. I think she also is found in 2016 of causing some problems. She seems to be not exactly the brightest bulb or the person that should be in there counting ballots. And now the news is the people looking at, I saw, was it, what's the guy's name? Is it 535? What's the name of that?
538.
Nate Silver.
He said the interesting thing about it is that the ballot itself had 26,000 undervotes, which means somebody would vote for the governor, but then not vote for the, or vote for the Senate, but not for the governor because of the way the ballot was designed. And maybe they didn't realize that, hey, there's another place down here I can vote for someone. So they said that's part of the problem that goes into this thing.
Yeah, that's the speculation. So the weird thing about Scott, again, he's the sitting governor now who's running and he's leading, and is he expects to be going to D.C. as the senator. He came on yesterday with Chris Wallace, and Chris Wallace on Fox News, and Chris Wallace actually looked at him kind of, with a querying eye. He accused Bill Nelson, his opponent.
Yeah, you want to hear that?
Fraud.
I have that.
Oh, do we? Okay, yeah. Okay, great.
We know Senator Nelson's lawyer said that a non-citizen should have the right to vote. Senator Nelson has gone to court to say that fraudulent ballots that were not properly delivered, signed, whatever, should be counted. Okay, Senator Nelson is clearly trying to commit fraud to try to win this election. That's all this is.
Wait a second. I want to pick up on that. You're accusing Bill Nelson of trying to commit fraud?
His lawyer said that a non-citizen should vote. That's one. Number two, he's gone to trial and said that fraudulent ballots should be counted. Ballots have already been thrown out because they were not done properly. He said those should be counted.
And you think that is the senator himself is committing fraud?
Well, it's his team.
Mm-hmm. And then more. Nelson's also criticizing Scott. He says,
and one fact is that Rick Scott isn't interested in making sure every lawful vote is counted. And the second is that he's using his power as governor to try to undermine the voting process. He's thrown around words like voter fraud without any proof. He stood on the steps of the governor's mansion and tried to use the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to investigate the Broward elections chief.
Broward's election chief. Is that Snipes?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it could be. I don't know what her name is.
Yeah,
but the thing is that, and this is, I heard a good Republican congressman from Florida say, listen, there are two things going on here. There can be like mismanagement, but that doesn't mean that it is, fraud.
Right, I understand.
There's something. And that distinction is what is being blurred by the accusation. So anyway, so today it went before a judge, and of course, the president, Trump is pouring gasoline on it, saying there shouldn't be any vote counts. It's already fraudulent. Right. And the judge just threw it out and said, there's no evidence of fraud. People should ramp down their rhetoric and continue with the count.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, they went to each of the senators. Right now, no one is disputing that the count itself is seeming to be handled properly, but it is. Why is it always Florida? I heard this. They say, here's the problem with Florida. It is really split. He says just about every state has these kinds of inaccuracies or things that don't quite seem systematic, but only in Florida, because it's such a big state and because it's such an important state and because it's so split down the middle, do these things become magnified to actually have serious significance.
I got it. Well, often with recounts from 2000 to 2015, it shifts only 0.002%.
Yeah.
When you
recount
it.
Tell that to Dino.
Well, that was obvious fraud. We'll be right back. Write to us on the Online Trading Academy text line 98973. Come on in, everybody. Somebody gets a chance to be letter of the day. Tom from the couch, I here in the studio. Tom back in the studio in 3 weeks from now, if his doctor says okay. Right now you're doing a little bit of seat filling there, Tom, at home.
That's right. That's one way to look at it.
Oh, by the way, Lake Washington, doors and windows. I don't know if, did you do this when I wasn't here? Were you breaking?
We save it for you, John.
Like Washington doors, windows and doors, Tom. What they really want you to do is, they don't want you to, it's not about somebody breaking a window. It's about replacing those old drafty windows and saving money and making your house more efficient. But I guess in order to help sell this, we throw the sound of breaking glass in there every 7 seconds, whether needed or not. 3, 2, 1. Okay. All righty. Little seat filling going on. You tried to do this. It's been known for a long time in the world of showbiz that during the Academy Awards, when the one actor gets up to get the award or something, when the camera pans, you don't want to see that empty seat, because then all of a sudden it looks like the actor sitting next to the empty seat has somehow upset somebody, or just your eye goes right to it. They don't want you to see the empty seat. So Hollywood for the longest time has had seat fillers in order to create the impression that there's nothing to see here. Everything is in place. You tried to actually sign up for this, didn't you, Tom?
That's right. At the suggestion of my program director, this is almost, about 20 years ago, she said, why don't you, this will be great. We'll send you down there. Why don't you apply to be a seat filler? And so I did officially apply, and I got this very nice but formal rejection letter. In fact, and said, oh, that we've changed in the last few years. I don't know however many years now it was ago. Uh-huh. They said that now only the seat fillers cannot be just, come from, the great unwashed.
Yes.
They have to come from the individual studios. So if I wasn't connected with a studio, then I wouldn't be allowed to apply for seat filling duty at the Oscars.
Well, there is a Facebook page called Seat Filler, and they have a list of a whole bunch of stuff you could fill for. You can go to the Latin Billboard Music Awards. You could do the Kids Choice Awards. You could go to live Michael Jackson celebration. They list all the stuff. Hey, you want to come see the show and sit in the audience to make the impression there's a lot of people that like this stuff. Now, I didn't realize this, but when it comes to corporate offices, you want to impress somebody coming in that you have a lot of people, so you end up hiring people to sit at a desk.
Yeah, this is a crazy story. This is from Quartz, and they take – this happens throughout, various industries, but just one particular instance they start with. In 2010, so Vice is I don't know what you call them, like a media company of sorts. And they were basically kind of a beginning startup. And they were going to have a meeting with Intel. Now, Intel obviously, has a huge marketing budget, and they have this huge access to all this money, and they were looking for some investments from Intel, and they had this meeting. Well, they looked around their dingy little offices in Williamsburg in New York and decided, this isn't going to be impressive to Intel types. And so what they did is they went to, in the same building, they went to this really nice architectural firm and asked if they could, for one day, in effect, rent out the architectural firm,
right.
And then they used that. They brought it. They installed a glass enclosed conference room. They installed a high-end Japanese toilet. And for the day, they tried to impress the Intel people by thinking that the Intel people were thinking that this was their office. Obviously, they're not, struggling. They're doing quite well.
Right.
And it worked. It convinced them that they are indeed a company on the up and were worth investing in.
It is a fine line, I think. You don't want to seem to be too top-heavy with a bunch, but you probably, that's that really close impression that you are lean, mean, hip, and cool with your high state-of-the-art toilet, plus enough people there. Yeah. If you look like you're a fly-by-night and you only have 7 people, right, and you don't have a ping-pong table or something else, you give the impression that maybe this company will not be here again in 3 weeks.
That's right. In fact, and that was the pièce de résistance for the Vice is they realized they only had like 8 employees, so they told all their employees and said, "Hey, bring your hippest 20-something friends to the office, and we'll act as if they're all working here."
Yeah.
And that was part of the scam. And they say this works both ways too. You mentioned that sometimes you want to look bigger than you are, but sometimes you want to look scrappier than you are.
Right.
And so on those days when you're having other people come by that you want to impress, you'd ask a bunch of your employees to stay home and work remotely so that it looks like, wow, look at this. This company is doing so well. They only have 6 or 7 people at their desks. This is really something. These guys are lean and mean. They are a good company to invest in.
Yeah, low overhead. One time I was represented by the William Morris Agency, they sent me to L.A. to audition for a game show. And beforehand, they said, well, the interview's at 1. At 11 o'clock, we want you to go to this location and we need you to pick out a watch and a pair of shoes. And I said, a watch and a pair of shoes? They said, well, when you go to have lunch, I forget the name of the fancy restaurant where you're having lunch, the people that you're sitting there with are going to be judging you by your shoes and your watch.
Wow.
And so I went there and I looked at these watches and the guy says, well, this watch with this band will go well with these shoes. You're a size 10 and a half. And there you go. And I walked out and you leave your credit card and your driver's license or something there. And then I remember sitting there constantly making sure my sleeve was back to show off my beautiful watch, which I hadn't even bothered to set. So I'm sure I made great impression. Plus, the other thing is I lied about my shoe size because I didn't want to seem to have small feet because sometimes people associate small feet with small socks. So I stepped out of the loafer when I was getting up from the table. So I think I made a great impression. Anyway, didn't get the job. Shocking. Shocking.
Yes, but it does explain you very well,
thank
John, because
you,
now you're all about show.
That's right. Well, I got it under control. What do you think about this? My dad, when he owned this company, he had about 200 employees. He drove a 1970 Ford Pinto, and he made sure that the parking spot had the word president in front of. And he said the reason he did this is people that would come in, I don't want them to think that I am having to pay for a great big fancy car with the money that they're spending at our business. So he intentionally drove a crappy looking car and parked it in the president's spot so that he would make that impression. Overall, I liked that idea. I'm sure some people are like, geez, the president's driving a Pinto?
Yeah. It's all for show, and it depends on you. As they say, it's in show business. It's in true. In any kind of, if you're giving a speech or a talk or teaching a class, you got to know your audience.
Right. Well,
and if you think that you have an audience that is going to be, judging you based on the quality of your shoes and your watch, then you need to get the shoe and watch. And if you're a company that's going to be judged by, there's somebody who's not spending the company profits on a fancy car, then that will all work to the good.
That's right. Well, the car, I didn't say he drove it. He just parked it there. He drove a Lamborghini.
Oh, that's even better. I like that. Somehow I preferred my image of your dad in a 1974 Ford Pinto.
No, he drove that. His business partner drove a Maserati Quattroport or something like that. It was constantly breaking down. And my dad's like, hey, nothing wrong with a Pinto as long as you don't hit it from behind. All right. Fast, profitable break. Come back. We have letters. We have a letter of the day, Jacob.
We do.
Oh, we haven't gotten a chance to zoom in on Jacob's mustache. Have we done that yet, Andrew? No.
Not today.
What do you mean not today? The show's not even over yet. Where are you going?
I'm saying we haven't done it yet today.
Oh, okay. Got it. All right. Come right back. Tom McCurley, Cairo Radio. Still a chance to write to us online, Trading Academy 98973, or come on in through the MyNorthWest.com. All right. Got a lot of letters, Tom. Let's do it. Let's get the mailman to get in here. Come on, mailman. President,
I also love the world.
Okay,
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Yeah, he does, right to the door. There's also a teeny tiny lady.
Hello.
Was she here when I wasn't here on Thursday and Friday?
She was here Thursday. I wasn't here Friday,
okay,
but I'm not
fine.
Sure.
All right, Tom. Let's get started.
All right, we'll start off with a couple of local types considering a run for the presidency in 2020, Jay Inslee and Howard Schultz. Area code 206 weighs in. I want Jay to run for president. Then he won't run for governor again. He will not get elected. Yay.
206, I would be so thrilled to have someone run as an independent or even a Democrat or Republican that was more of a centrist or moderate. Some of us are sick and tired of the extremes. I think there's a lot of us out there that would be pretty happy for a middle-of-the-road candidate.
Yeah, but what if they were bland? That's the problem. It's hard to get a firebrand in the middle. On the compassion and government discussion, John, I thought that was, I love the way you go to the root of our approaches to government. 360 writes in, so let me ask you, what is more compassionate, to feed a man or teach a man to feed himself?
Thank you, 360. Well, Allison in Seattle, Tom is right. The government can show compassion. My brother works for the Coast Guard, the government. He's compassionate as well as compassion for his coworkers, are part of the government who rescues people from rooftops in New Orleans, social workers who work tirelessly trying to help kids in bad situations, mediocre salaries, are compassionate. Teachers and firefighters and police, people who are compassionate, make up the government, make laws that help those that are struggling. Therefore, the government is compassionate.
On John's mystery seatmate, yes. 253. So now we got basically a rundown of guesses. Was it Samuel Jackson? I've seen him wear a gray turtleneck.
Was it Lou Gossett Jr., 360?
How about 425? Was it Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
Was it some guy I can't pronounce?
Mahershala Ali. He just won the Oscar last year for Best Supporting Actor.
Okay.
For Moonlight. 731. Hey, guys, I'm in the car for 10 more minutes. If Jacob can't figure out who the actor on the airplane was, my day is going to be ruined.
Allison, John, you could tell your story.
How can you?
How can you tell a story that you don't know the actor was? I feel like I missed the end of the movie. I know now. And then Jacob and I, during the commercial break, were typing in black actor images. And I was like, oh, it's Cleavon Little.
Leon Robinson, you thought for a second, but yeah. You decided it wasn't him.
He was too old. Okay, here we go. Keep going, Tom.
Okay. Larry in West Seattle, Finally the last one on this topic. Tom, when you finally have to come face-to-face with Curly's persona again after your long stretch on the couch, take your cue from John's return flight. Blanket over the head works every time.
Electric cars, can't get AM. James in Issaquah says, Teslas are not being able to receive AM radio stations is similar to the way that my iPad stops working in kitchen areas where I turn on the microwave oven. Sorry, Tom and John. Thawing out a frozen burrito usually wins out over you, stomach versus the mind.
On a beatboxing topic, Gordon Brown says, oh, my God, can we get more of Tom's beatboxing?
I tried my hardest to pull it. Unfortunately, with Tom music. Being remote, I can't get it.
Shoot. Tom, I'm so glad you took the bait on that. 253, you mean no one communicates?
I'm a trooper.
No one communicates using kicks and snares? Unbelievable.
And 253, was the actor on the plane Michael Winslow? He was the beatboxer from Police Academy.
Brilliant. They combined two in one letter.
Two topics.
Gun sales. Best gun salesman is a liberal talking about gun control.
Funny. And Trevor G. Nobody has defined what the state gun classes are going to be. A 2-hour class? A 16-hour class? And is it still required for all owners, even a person like myself who's 42 and has had a concealed carry permit for 20 years? Who knows? A 20-year-old, you can get married, buy a house, become a Marine or a cop, but can't buy a 22 caliber rifle. A waiting period was needed and background checks. Nothing else.
Robert in Auburn says, a few days before the 2016 election, I sold all my firearm stock off and on the chance that Trump would win. Later, as the company stock tanked and they flirted with bankruptcy due to lack of sales, I cheerfully bought them all back again. Happily again, the day when the gullible gun nuts can once again be driven into the blind, unreasoning and panic-driven buying sprees. I wish now publicly, profusely, to thank these people for their money-making predictability.
Wow. Lonnie in the 206. Create safes with little cameras on them, just like those doorbell cameras. Then you can have your proof that the gun was in the safe or not.
And Justin from Australia, I think Curly is correct. People needn't have anything outside the normal rational for defending themselves. So logically, John doesn't need anything more than a nice, what?
Charcuterie?
Charcuterie.
Plate. Is that with, like, vegetables?
Usually cheese and cured meats.
No, to keep an intruder at bay in Sammamish. Jeez, Justin. And all the way from Australia for that?
Ultra Running 206. I find the bad effects of long-distance running are mitigated if you run from one bar to the next, even more if someone is chasing you.
Oh, boy.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Letter of the day comes from Higgy in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
As I suffer through another episode via the interweb, I heard Tom and Curly going national? No! Next thing, you will open the EIT, Excellence in Tommunism Broadcasting Company, and schlepping pec implants, women's racing jackets, mustache grooming tools, and Tommy's all-in-one bedpan, and Curly opinion recycler. Syndication is for sissies, guys. FYI, if you're syndicated, you have to go to work every day. Finally, ambulate? Really, John? As a graduate of Ithaca College, the Cornell of Ithaca, New York, you shouldn't need to scrangle or Dutch oven a thesaurus to make your point. Wow, he's hitting us from all angles. Thanks, Iggy.
I'm done. Bye-bye.